This is Gray Man Media content.
We are
the Ballcasters.
Hell yeah. Welcome back, everybody.
You got me in the middle of typing something.
No, it was very funny.
Fucking. What a roaster.
Oh, yeah. It was absolutely phenomenal. Huh? We've gone a long way.
Yep.
We've gotten to a historic division with great success and great failure. And that is the Pacific Division.
Yeah. Pacific Division, it's a, you know.
It's a coin flip.
It is a coin flip. It's pretty much 50-50 on that being, you know, there's five teams. But it's pretty much 50-50 on whether you're going to find success in this division. I guess we'll jump right into it. Who you got for Phoenix? Let's just get that out of the way.
Phoenix? It's between Steve Nash and Jason Kidd.
Mm. I'm going to break your tie and say Steve Nash. Mm. If you're a player and your coach has to, like, threaten you to take more shots... You're a good teammate. You know what you're doing.
Yeah.
He's kind of rocking the NBA with the Nets right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he's a great coach because I feel like he's got the Steve Kerr thing for him where, like, his first coaching experience is fucking broken-ass team. But, you know, we're going to see how it plays out. We're going to see what happens in, like, 5 years when, you know, KD's getting old and Harden is, you know, probably past his prime in 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Kyrie will probably be, like, at the back end of his prime.
He'll be a spot-up shooter.
Yeah. Blake will be probably gone.
Blake will be retired.
I would imagine Blake's going to retire by then. And then DeAndre Jordan will be retired by then as well.
Oh, yeah.
And they just lost LaMarcus.
LaMarcus got injured.
Yeah. He has a heart condition.
Yeah. It's like, damn, I could have died any one of those couple thousand of games I've played. No, that thousand games. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, something around there.
Steve Nash, all-time great. Mm-hmm. All-time great. We'll see how he turns out as a coach. He's kind of...
He'll do well.
He's like, you know when you play the South Park video game, Stick of Truth?
I've never played that game.
Oh, so they have how you choose your difficulty is you choose the color of your skin. And... If you make your character black, you play on hard mode. If you make your character white, you play on easy mode. He literally made his character white. He just fucking jumped in.
This will be fun. Oh, so much gold.
Yeah. Well, moving on to one of the other not as successful teams. Let's look at the Clippers. Who's your favorite Clipper?
Blake.
Yeah, that was kind of like retro Blake too. That was like the
Dunker Blake.
Yeah, Dunker Blake. That was when he had the dunk contest.
Superstar.
Oh yeah, I'm a really big fan of Blake on record. Mm-hmm. But I'm probably gonna go with CP3. Mm. I just as an all time great basketball player, it's very clear that everywhere he goes, he's made better. That was no exception to the Clippers. He did make that team better while, you know, Clippers still are cursed as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel that he did make them better than, like, if Blake was the
focal point.
Yeah, the focal point of the offense. Because I just think, he's more versatile than Blake. He can actually shoot threes, and he can handle a lot better than Blake and pass ball better than Blake. While Blake is probably a better scorer, definitely a better slasher, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I just like what Chris Paul brought to that team a little more than a young Blake Griffin did. He got for the Kings.
I like Oscar Robertson or Tyreke Evans.
Okay. Why?
Tyreke Evans, well, he had... one good year that was on the Kings.
Yeah.
It was very fun to watch.
Yeah.
He was hitting half court shots like it was nothing.
It was like it was very like Jeremy Lin-esque, where it was like a 1 year thing and he was like really fucking popular because he just kind of blew up out of nowhere. And much like Linsanity, very a lot of parallels there.
Mm. What about you?
Probably Chris Webber. Mm. Defensive minded power forward. Very, very 80s and 90s style big man. And you know how I feel about 80s and 90s basketball. The era of the bigs. Mm-hmm. But I really like what he he really didn't give a shit about actually like scoring the basketball. He was just like, let me just get rebounds and blocks and you guys can do your own fucking shit. I don't give a fuck.
But he was like putting up like 55 and stuff like that.
Yeah, but like that's not like, even if you look back at Chris Webber now, it's like that's not even like what people are looking at. They're looking at
he stretched the floor
blocks. Yeah, he did. Not as much as like power forwards today, obviously, but if you're looking at, it's also framed very differently because that's not how 80s and 90s basketball was focused. So while yes, he was stretching the floor, he was scoring 55 and all that kind of stuff, like how, when you look like back at Chris Webber's career, you look at things like the rebounds and the blocks because that's how it was framed in that time period. Mm-hmm. And for me, those are some of his best highlights from like his on the defensive side of the ball, because that was what the focus of the 80s and 90s basketball was. Mm. Well, let's look at the second most successful team in this division, the Warriors.
Yes. Steph.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure how you, I mean, they were pretty irrelevant before Steph got there. I'm not sure how you look at it in any other way. I could see an argument for, like,
Run TMC was successful.
Yeah.
There's the We Believe Warriors. I wouldn't really say irrelevant, just not in the best, like, they weren't in the best situation. Irrelevant would have been in, like, the Hawks.
Yeah, but in terms of, like, that division.
The Kings would be more irrelevant than, like...
When the Phoenix was probably better than them, and the Lakers were probably better than them at that point.
At what point? The Run TMC?
Yeah.
No, because the 90s Suns were... That was with Jason Kidd and Nash off the bench. So they weren't really that solid of a team. Because, yeah, Jason Kidd wasn't, like, an all-star, but he wasn't, like, beating them. And then, would you say the Kings? The 90s Kings were bad.
No, the Lakers.
The 90s Lakers. They were also, like, they weren't that good.
But in that division, I mean, no one in that division was good.
In the beginning of the 90s, it would have been, like, would have been the Golden State Warriors. No, it would have been the Lakers and then the Golden State Warriors and then, like, and then it fodled off, was fodder.
Yeah, and then you get to the 2000s, you get Kobe. Mm-hmm. Speaking of the Lakers...
Elgin Baylor or Jerry West.
Ooh.
I really enjoy Jerry West's shooting ability, and if he had the, he'd be higher in the all-time rankings if he played with the three-point shot because he had range.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm probably gonna go with Magic. The prototype of the big power forward. The big like point forward. Who actually could play point forward. He was bigger than every point guard on the field, on the court, but also he was, like, still somehow faster than them, mm-hmm. which was weird. We had never really seen anything like Magic before. Now we have, you know, other examples of it. LeBron and Ben Simmons are the ones that come to mind as, like, point forwards.
Elgin Baylor,
yeah.
Was before, and then before him was, like, Oscar himself, which mm-hmm. was, like, the original, like, one of the original prototypes.
But Magic really kind of led the way to mainstreaming that. As, like, this can be something you can build around and be really successful. Mm. Yeah. What, in your opinion... So we talk a lot about like LeBron in the show and some of the more successful teams in the show. We don't talk about more some of the more average teams. We're both, you know, fans of a team that has been pretty average over the last pretty much their entire like existence. Obviously we have a championship now, but Toronto's been pretty middle of the road most of its existence. We're also fans of Denver Nuggets, which over the last like decade have been pretty middle of the road. I'm a fan of Portland, which same way. Why does it suck so much to be an average team?
Because you're not bad enough to get a game changer and you're not good enough to win anything important. So like fifth seed and below doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
That much, unless you have like a really, really lucky season and barely if ever, like those lower ones ever get to like pass the second round or sometimes even past the first. And it's just, you know, that expectation at the beginning of the season where you're just like, they're probably not going to go that far. And it's like, you know, it's all like for a wash. And you have this one team that are like, yeah, I expect them to go all the way and stuff like that. And so it's like big layoff between.
I think there are some exceptions to the whole fifth seed and lower don't really matter. Because like this year, for example, the Lakers aren't playing well because AD and LeBron are hurt. Mm-hmm. But like if they get knocked out of top four seeds, they're still going to be one of the most dangerous teams in the West because they're going to come back with a healthy LeBron and a healthy AD for the playoffs. And we saw what happened last year when AD and LeBron both got like 4 months off. So I think there are some exceptions with that. Like when LeBron was in Cleveland, like pretty much any year that he was there, he was going to the finals because that's just kind of how that worked while he was there. And it really didn't matter what seed he ended up being. He could be the 1 through 4. I would also argue that like if he was in the bottom four seeds, he would probably have a very similar outcome just because it wasn't as much of just a straight physical game for LeBron. He had a mental game over every fucking team in the East. So I think there are some exceptions to that, but I would agree with you that like you're not good enough to get a lottery pick. You're not bad enough to get a lottery pick, but you're also not good enough where like I would say it's probably like the first couple of teams out of the playoffs or like the 7th and 8th seed. Is the kind of the teams we're talking about?
I would push it up to say the 6th through 8th seeds.
Okay.
Because out in the West, that doesn't really mean jack shit. Because the 16th seed over there would be like a third seed in the East usually. Well, not this year because the West kind of blows.
Yeah.
Blows really bad because the Nuggets went from like the 7th seed to the fucking third seed real fast.
Yeah. Man, fucking tough. So in that sense, we're like, so you talk about these average teams. So something that's come up a little bit in the last, and I mean, this has been a thing for a while, as long as you've had, you know, draft lotteries, and it can be a really big thing in the NFL sometimes. Mm-hmm. But tanking has kind of come to the forefront a little bit with. In terms of the NBA and the NFL, in my opinion, I think that tanking is bad for the fans. It can be good for the organization, but also the fans are the ones who are paying your bills, and you should be coming out every night wanting to win for the fans. NFL has a big issue, especially with like. Atlanta had this, like, the last couple of years where they were trying to tank to the point where, like, they had a their running back scored a touchdown, and then, like, they were like, bro, you just won us the game. What are you doing? And we were like, what is happening right now? So, like, there's definitely more, like, blatant like versions of it like that. And then I think NBA is a little bit more... a little bit better at hiding it than the NFL is. Because even in the NBA, if you have a stacked team, you can still be trash.
Lakers. 2013
yeah.
Lakers.
Yeah. Also, I would, after Celtics won their last championship, they were still like a really good team, but you know, their top three had gotten a little older and they were garbage.
Absolute
garbage. But how would you fix that? How do you fix tampering? How do you fix tanking?
Tanking? Oh, well, that's just more of a sense of don't reward like teams for being bad on purpose. Like the 76ers constantly had like top three picks and stuff like that, and they like, you know, eventually they hit something and struck out, and it was unfair mm-hmm. to like teams that are like trying to win and they just can't help it because, you know, the lack of talent and disparity. And I think it would be better for the league if they did like more, like a play tournament for it, and then go the rest by like order.
Yeah.
From like worst to best record, and then have like the number one seed be with the play-in. If you really want that, then your team would be able to provide, you know, success for your player that you're going to get.
Okay. But how does that, so with the play-in, I hear the argument of the play-in tournament a lot with, and that's going to make a lot more teams try to stay competitive. But how do you get those, like, because I mean, most teams that are going to be the 7th and 8th seed, they're pretty realistic about their odds to win the championship. Even last year where you had we had Clippers versus Golden State, and the Clippers kind of like gave Golden State the business in the first game. They still like kind of knew what was going to end up happening.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you fix it for those specific teams? Because like the play-in tournament's only going to take you so far with actually like motivating teams to try harder. Because there are teams that are just realistic about their chances, and they're like, well, we can't win with the current status of our team, so let's get that game changer instead of like, let's just call this season a wash, and then let's build for our future. So how do you fix that?
The idea of like, if you're not like a top three seed, then you shouldn't just really compete for a championship anymore is kind of like a unfortunate thing, even though it's like a kind of a reality at this point that if you're not like top,
yeah, if you're not the Nets, Lakers, or then really you're just kind of I guess Nuggets are in that conversation now.
Yeah,
we're gonna see how they do in the actual playoffs this
without
year.
Jamal Murray, but I think they'd be fine due to how much depth they have.
It's interesting, and you're gonna have to see them from one of the top season, like one of those teams that like everyone's coming for.
Mm-hmm.
The Nuggets are good enough this year where whatever they're doing, like teams are preparing for them for the playoffs. Especially with Jokic, teams are trying to learn how to cover him at this point.
You can try.
Like, well, yeah,
you can try to cover LeBron.
That's true. It's true. So do you think that goes to more of a systematic issue with how the league is organized with, you know, the top two or three teams are just kind of like, this is just kind of how it's going to happen?
Well, the obviously way to go is not to go give it to the worst person,
mm-hmm.
because that just means like you just
people are competing for last place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that hasn't been really like, for me, for my, like, the way I looked at the draft for the NFL, hasn't really done that well for the player. Because it usually goes to, like, a bad organization or something like that. It really goes to, like, a, you
yeah,
know.
Well, and the NFL doesn't have as much mobility as the NBA.
Yeah.
Unless you're, like, one of the top two or three quarterbacks. Or, like, running backs have absolutely no power over where they are because there's a premium on running backs. There's a lot of really good running backs who can make a difference on a team. Wide receivers the same way. Most skill positions are the same way. But if you're not one of those like top, you know, two or three players, you really just don't have any mobility. And that's a big issue that the NFL, well, I don't call it that much of an issue because you know how I feel about mobility in the NBA. But if you're looking at it from the perspective of the NBA, that is a big issue that happens with the NFL. That's more the issue with, you know, trash teams getting all these players because they get all these young players because they're bad.
Yeah.
And then once their contract runs out,
they're gone.
Yeah, they're gone. Like, we saw what happened with Sam Darnold, where, like, Sam Darnold was supposed to be, like he came out, he's supposed to be one of the most prepared for the NFL from his college experience. He came to the Jets. Jets are a terribly run organization. And, you know, 3 years in his tenure there, they're like, all right, well, we're just going to trade you and draft, you know, another rookie quarterback to build around, when they didn't fix any of the issues that they actually had that caused Sam Darnold to be so bad. But yeah, it's there. I think there are differences in how that I would attribute most of the player issues in the NFL to a lack of mobility rather than the worst team gets the best pick. Because I also don't want to be like, you know, the upper, like, I think if you're the worst team, you should be getting something to make your team better.
Yeah.
And you should be, especially like in a market-based league, you should be able to bring in someone who's going to be able to A, sell tickets,
mm-hmm.
and B, just make your team more, more likable to possible free agents to come in. So, yeah. Speaking of the NFL, though, and especially with quarterbacks,
mm-hmm.
since we were talking about young quarterbacks for a second there, it's interesting that, like, the job details of a quarterback are unlike any other job, like, even in sports.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, when you get drafted, you're making the least amount of money that you're ever going to make in your career. And so, naturally, that's going to be typically where you have the most talent around you, because the team can actually afford to build around you.
Mm-hmm.
But quarterback is also the highest paid position in the league. So, I feel like this is a lot of... We used to have this issue in the NBA, and for some reason, everyone just found a whole shit ton of money to pay people, and people just started taking pay cuts.
Yeah.
But with the NFL, you have, like, this one cornerstone player, and then if they don't take massive pay cuts, they're not going to get built around. So, how do you... Like, here's an example. Like, over the last 10 years... No one, if you have not taken a massive pay cut, or you're not in your rookie quarterback, on your rookie contract, you have not won a Super Bowl. It's only been Tom Brady, or if your name is Manning. If your last name is Manning, you've won a Super Bowl, and you haven't had to take a pay cut. But you've had Tom Brady, you've had Peyton Manning.
Big Ben.
Big Ben as in the last decade.
Oh, in the last decade, yeah. Right.
He was back in the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Mahomes, which was on his rookie contract at the time. And then Drew Brees, which took a massive pay cut. That's crazy.
It's fucking nuts.
It's fucking nuts. I think Eli... No, Eli was last decade. I might be wrong.
Yeah, Eli was 2011.
Okay, so it was this past decade. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, in the last decade. Yeah, so...
And Aaron Rodgers?
He had not taken a big contract yet. Because that was pretty quick after Favre had retired, and he hadn't gotten a bigger contract yet. Because he hadn't played yet. So, but yeah. It's crazy. It's the only position in sports that's left like that, where after your rookie contract, if you don't take massive pay cuts, you're just kind of fucked. Yeah. So we kind of saw a change with that in the NBA, I was talking about, with, you know, it used to be you just had your cornerstone player and you built around them, you know, through the draft, and you brought in cheaper free agents and all that kind of stuff. How can, and we don't talk about NFL very much on this show, but how would you, if you were, you know, say you were the NFL commissioner, how would you go about making that switch where you can still pay your quarterback, but then you can also afford to build around them? I have a few ideas, but I want to hear what you
asked. I have no idea about anything about, and if I don't know why you asked me that question, Austin, there's no content in there for me. I don't know how to deal with that. It's not that I don't like football. It's the sense that I do not like, it's not as easy to understand as like basketball, because basketball, you have to have like, I know all the factors, I mean, most of the factors that go into it, how you build a team and how you do all this stuff around it. It's like, you can't really have a mediocre like quarterback anymore. You got to have like a really good, like a good one to even stand a chance. And you like, you in the NBA, you can have a mediocre like center that just rebounds and dunks, and that's fine enough to make it all the way to the finals. And that's but you can't really do that in the NFL. You have to have really.
It depends, and there are some teams that like can make it work with a just, you know, a middle of the road quarterback. The one right now that really like draws attention is Cleveland, because the only thing that's going to keep them out of the championship, you know, over the next couple of years is either injury, which you can't really predict. That's kind of how the world works. Or Baker Mayfield's inconsistencies. Mm-hmm. So if Baker, even at his best, is not a top 10 quarterback in the league, I will argue this with anybody who wants to slide into my DMs. I don't give a fuck. If at his best, he is not a top 10 quarterback in the league. Mm-hmm. But at his best, with the talent around him, he can, I believe that team can win a championship. Just because that team is ridiculous.
It's surprisingly built. I'm not going to say it's very well built. It's surprisingly built.
It is very well built. They have probably, like, they had one of the best defenses last year, and they got better on their D-line, and they got better in their secondary. And then Baker has a shit ton of weapons around him. Mm-hmm. You've got probably the best 1-2 punch running back team in the league. And you've got Odell Beckham Jr. and I think Jarvis Landry is the other running back, the wide receiver there, I think. I'm probably wrong about that. Don't quote me on that. But yeah, I mean, their weapons are good. They've got a decent O-line. It's not anything special, but they do have a, you know, decent to good O-line. You know, I think it's really just coming down to, can Baker turn it on and be like the number 12 quarterback in the league for you know, the entire season? And as of yet, he has not shown that he can do that. But if he can be at his potential, I think that they can, even with an average level quarterback, go on and win a championship.
I'm sorry. I wish I had something there. I'd have to actually do more research into the NFL. I would have to play Madden for a week.
Don't learn the NFL like that. Oh my God. Don't learn football like that, Eric. All right. Well, let's talk about something else. Since I'll give you some time then, Eric, to do your research, and then we'll come back to this on the show. All right, we'll come back to this. All right, so.
Well, it's going to be a hot minute because I have to move and do all the shit ton of stuff.
Yeah, well, season two. We'll figure it out. All right, so I have a question for you. We've been talking about this at length for the last couple of days. And I want to know who would win in a fight. Goku or Ben 10,000?
Goku.
Now, why?
Because you said he would be able to scan Goku, right?
Yes, because Goku is, as a Saiyan, Goku is technically an alien. So Ben 10,000 would be able to scan him with the Omnitrix and use the power. He'd be able to go up to, like, I think it's Saiyan 4.
Well, 4's not canon anymore. It'd be 3 at most.
Super Saiyan 3.
Yeah.
But Ben 10,000 can also telepathically switch which aliens he's going to use, as well as combine different abilities from aliens. So I'm just saying, imagine Goku mixed with forearms, or mixed with Ripjaw, or mixed with, you know, Cannonball.
You have to take into effect that Goku is, like, considered, like, the greatest fighter in his universe, in multiverse even. One of the greatest fighters in the multiverse, in his multiverse.
And Ben 10 has killed a lot of the greatest fighters in his respective multiverse, so.
He doesn't.
He killed Vilgax.
You sure? Like, at the very end.
I'm pretty, yeah. Well, but yeah, then at the very end, he killed him.
I think Vilkex was, like, a champion of, like, was it? Yeah, because it would be, like, yes. Yeah, but, like, Goku actually fought something that actually conquered a whole universe. And that's not even, like, it started to affect the multiverse as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something, like, yeah, Ben has, like, Alien X, but Alien X would be, no, Ben 10,000 doesn't have Alien X.
Yeah, it does.
Not in the, like, which one are you talking about? Are you talking about the original Ben 10,000, or are you talking about, like, Ben 10 Alien Force 10,000, or are you talking about, because there's, like...
Omniverse?
10,000,
because that's peak power Ben 10,000. And he would need to be peak power to beat Goku.
And then that, like, is he in, like, this would be the adult one, right?
Yes. The one who has full control over the Omnitrix, has the latest version of the Omnitrix, latest update... is able to fully control and has training with the aliens.
I still don't think he stands against. Like, there's been multiple debates about how people were trying to spin it for, like, Ben 10,000. He wouldn't know how to instantly do it if this is, like, the first time he meets Goku and he scans him, he would still not stand a chance if he had, like, time to train with, like, Goku's thing. I guess it'd be, like, you know, decent. But then again, the power difference between Goku and, like all the aliens that I've seen, he would be able to beat up Alien X by himself without, like, being affected by the warping reality. Like, the reality-bending powers, because he's fought, like, people that are able to, like, erase stuff and stuff like that. So, like, stuff that I've seen, he would not really do well against Goku. Because Goku, in the series, has a lot of, like, hacks where... There are literally people, like, there are times, like, you know, how people were trying to say, like, well, you could use mind tricks on Goku. Well, not really, because how they would train when they were not able to, like, physically fight, they would do mental training. And so they would, like, literally get stronger through that. And so it'd really be, like, you know, that's out of the water. You can't really, like, kill him through, like, fire or, like, lava because he would be too fast. And there's not an alien that's been fast enough to, like, that I've seen besides, like, you know, the most powerful alien that he has. That I've seen is Alien X, and Alien X is really beneath, like, most of the fighters. And they're not multiversal beings because they can control, like, a centered reality, right? And they're, like, this space, and that's why, like, there are different, like, you know, versions of Alien X. But, like, Goku has literally, like, trained with Angels of Destruction who are able to, like, go through multiple universes and fight multiple things. And then he's been, it's just like, there's like a completely huge power rift that people don't understand is there. And it's hilarious.
Well, everyone listening, go and go to Gray Man Media on all the social media platforms. Just blow them up.
Join the subreddit.
Please join the subreddit. Let us know what you think, whether Goku or Ben 10,000 would win that fight. Very interested to see if anyone... says anything and who they say wins.
Go watch the Ben 10 versus Goku breakdown between Seth the Program and Kubo the Artist, because he's a really, really renowned, those two are renowned experts in both topics, Seth the Programmer and most manga things, and Kubo the Artist, and anything Ben 10 related. It's actually quite cool. The Ben 10 timeline is very cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, we've talked about this a couple times. We got a plan. We got a trip coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to Disney World. Disney World. Mm-hmm. It's more of a straight Orlando trip now. Mm-hmm. Now that we kind of got bamboozled.
Yeah.
But, not salty about it. A little salty. But, let's talk about that a little bit. Talk about what, because we're going to be recording when we're down there.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, having a Disney World special.
Disney World special. We're going to have a day trip to Miami.
Yep. Definitely taking a day trip to Miami. You know, doing all the nightlife of Orlando, which is apparently fucking crazy.
Oh, yeah.
So
many nightclubs I got to go to.
And, you know, Florida doesn't even have all those regulations anymore. So
we can, they don't really care.
We can do whatever the fuck we want.
I'll be fully vaccinated by then, so I'm ready to go.
Yeah. Yep. Bamboozle us. Well, you know what? We're still gonna go buck wild.
Is it gonna be a shitty hotel? Yeah, but you know, we're still gonna have fun.
Oh, yeah.
I'm excited. It's gonna be a good time. I plan on wearing like absolute ridiculous outfits for down there, especially in the club. I'm gonna wear a turtleneck.
I hate you.
I'm so fucking
bro,
ready.
Bro, wear one of those the turtlenecks, but like they're sleeveless.
Oh my god, a sleeveless turtleneck?
Yeah.
Absolutely disgusting. It's all on my list. I'm putting it, I'm buying it from eBay.
Oh my goodness. I want to go to Miami, but like let's leave Orlando at like noon, get down there at like 4 o'clock so that we can do all the nightlife shit.
Oh my god. That'd be so exciting.
You know, maybe hit the beach for like an hour.
I want to play dominoes. I want to go to a bar, like a real,
You're going to play dominoes with the QB guys?
Yeah, bro. Lose a couple $100.
You would get destroyed. Are you good at dominoes?
I play with my granddaddy.
But are you good at dominoes?
I'd have to, like, you know, freshen up.
Do you know how to play spades?
Like, no.
You don't know how to play spades?
No. I've never played spades.
What do you mean?
Like, nobody in my household played spades. Ever.
Crazy.
We would play Monopoly.
I love spades.
We would play War, and we would play Goldfish and Uno. That's it.
Uno kills me. Destroys my whole fucking life. I can't believe you've never played spades.
I can't recall any time that I actually have. There was this card game. It was really good when I was on the PS2.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best system ever. And I would learn how to play all these random card games. It was like pigs and like spoons and then crazy eights.
Yeah.
And then I forgot. One of them was my favorite because I would always clap people at this game. And it was... Fuck. Well, poker is my favorite, so...
I like poker.
I'll definitely play that.
Eric, let's go. We gotta go to a casino.
Oh my god. I'm definitely hitting blackjack. Definitely going to blackjack.
I'm pretty good at blackjack. Pretty good. I won a couple $100.
I'll stand. You didn't even get your first... Okay, cool.
It's weird that, like, we have all these... First of all, it's weird that we, like, we grow up with all these different games, but there's so many games out there.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many just random... So much random, like, activities that you can do with people. And it's weird that, like, as a society, we don't just have, like, 5 or 6 things, like, everybody's like, yeah, this is the game. This is the game that everybody plays.
Fucking Uno?
I don't think everybody plays Uno.
Oh, most definitely.
I think I've definitely met people that, like, prefer Phase 10 over Uno.
What even the fuck is Phase 10?
Have you ever played Rummy?
No.
Exactly.
Because I play normal people car games.
What do you mean? That's a normal people car game?
Never, ever, ever heard anybody play Rummy around me.
You've never?
Never.
I like Rummy.
Egyptian Rat Scratch, I've heard that.
Yeah, okay, like that. Yeah, but now who sounds like the ridiculous one?
It's ERS. Most, bro.
You play some Caravan?
No. I don't even like Fallout.
You don't have to like Fallout to like Caravan.
I don't know. It'd be.
I don't even know how to play it on Fallout.
Well, I'm just going to play all these cards down.
They just like, all right, I'm putting this card down.
We'll see what happens. Yeah. There are some games where I literally cheat, where I did that, where I don't know what's going on, but I still win. And I'm like, okay.
Oh, okay.
This is a good card.
That was me at first with Blackjack. I was just like, hit. And I was like, oh, okay. That's 21. I was like, okay, hold.
Hold.
Just go and chill that out.
What if I counted these cards?
I don't count cards. I use basic strategy.
All right. This is a 15. I will hold.
Yeah. It's all about odds.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? It's made me some money. It's all I'm, you know. Also, we recently had a, speaking of money,
mm-hmm.
We had a spike in Dogecoin this week.
Oh, fuck yeah.
You know, as two avid Dogecoin supporters.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude.
We're on the boat. Please put a cap on Dogecoin.
Please, Bitcoin has a cap at like 120 billion or something like that. And so it's really shut off, so it's actually able to make profit instead of constantly putting out Doge. Which
I think I read somewhere that Dogecoin already has more out than, like, more coins out than Bitcoin has.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
absolutely disgusting.
We'd have to put the cap on it right now. It would still be a struggle. get it up. But I believe in this community. It's a very, very positive enforcement community.
Mm-hmm.
They're just here for the meme.
I don't know how it got to 31 cents so fast.
It was crazy. It hit like 40 cents and then dropped back down, and now it's just been floating at 30. It's, you know, it's a whole... The whole thing, we're at 34 cents as of the recording of this video. You know, I'm sitting pretty with like $3,000 worth of Dogecoin.
I got 800.
I'm not a financial advisor. I just like the coin, but highly recommend buying it. Let's all go to the moon together. All
right, here it is. This is this Reddit post I was talking about earlier. With Dogecoin, you're buying hype. Hype might push Dogecoin to 69 cents, maybe $1, but there is zero reason for the Dogecoin to hold that value. In fact, at $1 per Dogecoin, with 1 billion coins added every 80 days, Dogecoin would need 1 billion in new investment every few months to maintain $1. There is $129 billion Doge, is a huge market cap. That's the same value as Starbucks.
So at $1, we just got to sell.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. Once it gets to $1, we sell.
Sell it.
Honestly, 69 cents? I could sell it 69 cents. I'd do it for the meme.
I'm thinking about selling right now. Because they're not... If they don't plan on putting a cap on it, then there's like no way it's going to maintain its value for that long.
I've been looking at some other cryptos and some other stocks. Raven. I like the stonks.
I like Ravencoin because it's an animal. I like birds.
Eric, this is why we have a show together. Because you like birds.
I am a very simple man. I like something. If it hits one of the basic markers, then I will probably do it. And plus, I have ADHD, so I have problems with, you know, impulse. Like, I'm about to buy these $105 dice. No regrets.
Well, thanks for tuning in this week, guys. It's been an interesting episode. We love you all, and hope to see you all next week.
See you next time. See you guys. Peace. Devin, hit that lo-fi. Hopefully Jess doesn't lose this one.
She's only lost one. It's one too many. Well, I can't wait for Jess to listen to this and edit it. There you go, Jess. Redacted.